Hello and welcome to the Homegrown Food Summit. This is Marjorie Wildcraft, and this summit is brought to you by the Grow Network, which is the premier community of people who really see the wisdom in being able to grow your own food and make your own medicine. And, you know, I get topics, suggestions for what we put into this summit based on your responses. Quite frankly, I send out surveys and call and get feedback from you. And by the way, when you fill out that survey, which I'll be sending to you later, I read every single one of those responses. So I hear what you have to say. And over again, people go, Marjorie, we want to know how to grow in greenhouses. And I've been looking for a long time for a really, really good presenter. I approached Elliot Coleman many times, but he's actually kind of in his 80s and not, you know, like, anyway. I found the perfect, most amazing person, and her name is Lynn Gillespie. And she lives in Payona, Colorado, which is a pretty cold place in the winter. And she has five greenhouses that she grows fruits and vegetables for herself and her family in. And Lynn was telling me a little bit of her backstory of when she was a very young mother, she, you know, wanted to do something, you know, have some meaningful work as well as, you know, be home and be able to work with and, you know, raise the kids. And her husband, Tom, built her a greenhouse, and that was more than 30 years ago. And she's been growing in greenhouses ever since. This woman really knows what it takes to produce food in a cold climate, and she really knows the five different greenhouses, as you'll see in this presentation. Each one is heated in a different way, in a very unique way. So she's got almost every way that you can imagine of heating and building greenhouses. So definitely take a look at this presentation if you're interested in building your own or operating your own. And then at the end of the presentation, I'll tell you about a really unique opportunity that I have regarding these greenhouses coming up in January of 2020. But here's Lynn Gillespie and growing in greenhouses.
I love to eat good fresh food, and I love organic nutrient-dense fruits and vegetables that are bursting with flavor. But the problem is this kind of food is hard to purchase, and if I can find it, it's very expensive. So my solution to my dilemma is just to grow my own. So when I grow my own, I am in control of what goes on the soil, what is sprayed on the plants, what type of seeds are planted, how it is fertilized, and when it is harvested. I feel very fortunate to have such a great source of inexpensive, safe, fresh food for my family. The next problem starts when I want to eat 365 days of the year, and in my Zone 5 growing season, there's only 160 growing days maximum, and that's if I'm really diligent about covering the plants. So the solution to this problem, besides fasting for 205 days of the year, is to extend my growing season so I can keep eating the foods that I love. I can gain about 90 days with cold frames and low tunnels, but if I really want to extend my season, I want a greenhouse. Now, I can fast, but I only last about 4 hours. So you're thinking about a greenhouse or have just built one. Now what? You dream of the beautiful crops that will come out of it, but you don't know where to begin. So there's five essential factors for greenhouse success. The key is to be aware and work with these five factors, and your greenhouse endeavors will be successful. But before we get to those, you will need to answer one question. This question will determine the entire path that your production takes and how happy you are with your efforts. The answer to this question can increase your health or destroy it. So once you've answered this question and made up your mind, don't turn back. Don't change your mind. Go forward and learn the skills that you need to be successful with your decision. The path will not always be easy, but you can learn, grow, and be very successful. So what is the question? What do we need to decide before we journey into our greenhouse adventure? Okay, here it is. Are you going to be an organically based grower or a chemically based grower? You need to choose which one it's going to be. I'm an organic grower. The difference between the two is an education. The organic grower will have a different set of skills than the chemically based grower. Mother Nature has been growing organically for more years than we can count. Our chemically based production has only been around for less than 200 years. So if in doubt, I side with Mother Nature. Now, everything you're going to learn today will be based on organic gardening, not chemically based gardening. I made my decision 30 years ago, and I've never had a season without plenty of food. I don't need chemicals to produce food, and neither do you. If anyone tries to tell you differently, you need to find a different source of information. When we garden organically, we work with Mother Nature and her systems, and they will provide us all the bounty that we need, whether we are growing indoors or outdoors. Okay, let's take a look at our five essential factors for greenhouse success. The five factors we need to work with to create successful crops in our greenhouses are climate control, soils, how to lay out your building, disease and insect control, and crop timing. So if any one of these are off, you will not get the most out of your greenhouse. All right, so let's start by talking about climate control. So do you have a favorite environment that you thrive in? I do. I like it warm and sunny, food in my belly, and peace in my family. So plants have a favorite environment too. So our job is to provide them with a perfect environment so they can live up to their full genetic potential. With the addition of a greenhouse, we can provide more of the environmental factors that will improve our crops. So one of the beauties of growing in a greenhouse is you have some control over the climate. So do you thrive when you are too hot or too cold? Well, neither do your plants. So a greenhouse gives us a chance to change the climate to be more favorable for the plants. So changing zones is the biggest advantage that our structures provide for us. A perfect example is you can collect heat in your greenhouse and plant your plants weeks earlier because you can control the frost that would kill your plants. For each layer of protection, you can take your plants one zone higher. For example, I live in zone 5 and I have a greenhouse that has a cover layer. The roof has two layers of plastic with air blown in between. So this takes me down to zone 7. And next I have a low tunnel with a heavy frost blanket on it. And this takes me to zone 8. Now I can grow cool weather plants year-round in my greenhouse. So compare this to my zone 5 outdoor garden where I have a growing season of 160 days maximum. Inside, I now have 365-day growing season. I will still have the short days in the winter and things will grow slower, but now I can grow virtually frost-free. Now I have control over my fresh food supply and I don't have to fast. Yay! Okay, there are two ways to go about running your greenhouses. If you are willing to pay for heat and run grow lights, then you can grow warm weather plants such as tomatoes and green beans all year round. I prefer to have a change of season and not pay for the extra heat and lights, which are required for the warm weather plants. So if you're going to go heaterless and not add artificial light for your main crops, then you'll switch to the cool weather plants such as lettuce and spinach during the shortest days of the year. In the Setting Your Greenhouse Up for Success information bundle, you will find a chart titled 365-day growing season in a temperate climate. So these are zones 4 through 8. So this is a sample of what you could harvest every month from your unheated greenhouse. So take a look at the chart and see how much food you could create on a yearly basis. So start formulating what you want to grow in your greenhouse. Also, in the Success Bundle, there is a list of the cool and warm weather plants, just in case you don't know what those are yet. So basically, cool weather plants can take a frost and the warm weather plants cannot. In the heat of the summer, you can cool your greenhouse with a swamp cooler and fans, and this will allow you to grow more of the cool weather plants, such as broccoli and lettuce, through the hotter summer months. So basically, the greenhouse is giving us better control over the climate so the plants can be happier and grow better. Okay, I have 5 greenhouses and I would like to take you on a tour of the greenhouses. And we're going to start with this one. This is the big house. And I want to show you how the five factors come into play in the greenhouses. Okay, so here in the big house, the first thing I want to show you is our climate control. And so we're going to go down to this end. And this here is, this is our swamp cooler. So this is just, it's basically a cardboard pad that we run the water in, the water drips through it, and then we have fans at the other end, and they suck the air through the building, and this is an evaporative cooling system, and it'll take us down probably close to 20 degrees during the heat of the day. So it's really a great way to cool your greenhouse, so we have the swamp cooler for that. And then for heating in this house, let me show you what we have over here. So this is about all of the heating system that you can see. So out in the parking lot, which is on the other side of this wall, we have a 6-inch sewer pipe that's buried 5 feet in the ground. And there's 168 feet of pipe that goes through the soil, and then it comes up and the air comes out here. So we have a fan that runs here. And so when the building drops below 50 degrees, this fan comes on automatically. So it takes the outside air, pulls it through the earth under the parking lot, and blows the air into the building. And that does a couple things for us. One, it keeps our soil from freezing, so I can actually grow in here year-round. It gives me the 365-day growing season. And it also creates a positive pressure, so we are actually pushing more air into the building, which is pushing upward. So as the temperature is dropping outside, we don't have the air, the cold air coming in, we still have the push of the air, the 50 degree air going through here. Actually, the air comes in at about 45 degrees here. So it's not the tropics. But the beautiful thing about this system is it allowed us to get rid of our propane heaters, and it changed the entire environment of this greenhouse. So pretty neat heat system. Okay, so that's our heating and cooling. The other things we need to look at is the layout. And you can see this is one of our grow beds here. And the grow beds have a narrow aisle in between, and there's like 15 grow beds on this side of the building, and there's 15 on the other side. We have a wide aisle in the center, so I can get like a wheelbarrow or a wagon in here. And then the narrow aisles on the side. So this layout is really efficient for us to grow. The other thing that we have in this system with the raised beds is we have the sandy loam soil, which we're going to be talking about in a few minutes. And all my sandy loam soil is contained in the beds, so I'm not walking on it, and it's not in the aisles. So as I create more sandy loam soil for my plants to grow in, I don't have to have the expense of having that sandy loam soil in the aisles. The other thing that I get in here is our crop timing. So I have beds that are just coming on, beds that are older, beds that are newer, and we're constantly shifting this out, and I can do that 365 days of the year so that I have food to eat every day of the year. No fasting for me. So the next factor to greenhouse success is soil. So 99% of us have soil that the plants don't like, and it can stunt their growth. So most people have clay soil or sand for soil, and neither of those has enough organic matter to make the plants happy. So my native soil is clay, and it doesn't grow very good vegetables. I've known people that have tried to amend their soil for 30 years, and they still complain about how bad their soil is. My solution is just to start with the soil that the plants will do their best in, instead of trying to amend my clay soils that the plants really don't like. So the space in a greenhouse is premium, and we should give the plants all the advantages that we can so they can thrive. Soil is one of the biggest factors to their thriving. So in our greenhouses, we start with the soil that the plants do like. I don't have 30 years to wait for the soil to improve. So almost all vegetables, they like a sandy loam soil with added compost. So this is what we will give them from the beginning. Instead of spending money on soil amendments to put in the clay soil, We will use the amendments to create the perfect soil from day one, so we have success the very first year. So the sandy loam soil, it houses more than just the plants. The soil is also home to our plants' best friends. So we want our plants to be happy. They will need to have space for their friends. So what am I talking about? The microbes that live in the soil. So the microbes in the soil work in tandem with the plants to extract the nutrients from the soil for the plants to use. And the plants in return provide carbohydrates to their microbe friends in exchange. This is very good for us, good for our plants and the planet. So if we were using chemicals to feed and depest our plants, few microbes would survive in that chemical environment. So when the soil becomes devoid of microbes, the plants are without friends and they are not very happy. So we now have our first reason not to grow with chemicals. So what does sandy loam soil look like? Okay, so I went out in my yard and I dug up some soil. Let me tell you, it was 12 degrees this morning, so this was not an easy task. Okay, so here we go. This is clay soil. This is what all of our land is like. And as you can see, it's probably better for pottery than for plants. The soil particles are too small, too close together, and the plant roots really struggle in this. Look at here, we can make us a beautiful pot today. There we go. Okay, so that's clay soil. A soil that would be sandy would look like the beach, sand soil. Okay, and then this is sandy loam. So I want to show you sandy loam. So this is what it looks like. You can tell it's very different from the clay. I can't compact it. I can't get it to make a bowl. Matter of fact, I could take my bowl and I could fill it with the sandy loam. And now we have a flower pot. We could grow a plant in that. Okay, so the sandy loam, it's based with sand so that there's a good volume of air and water that can get in between the particles. The roots can grow really easily in it. The microbes can function in this. And then to the sandy loam soil, then we add the compost. And that's where the magic really happens, when we're getting the sandy loam soil that the roots and the microbes like to live in, and then add the compost. So in your success bundle, you're going to find a sandy loam soil worksheet, and that will help you to learn how to make sandy loam for you and your garden. Soil is probably the main factor in your plant's success. When the plants and the microbes can thrive, most other problems don't exist. So how can I tell if my soil is performing well, has lots of microbes, and is healthy for my plants? The clue is to look for earthworms. Earthworms will only live in an environment where they can find food. The earthworms eat the microbes and the arthropods, and you will see very few earthworms in poor soil or in chemically treated soil. So now that we have the best soil for the plants, there's no sense in putting the soil in the walking aisles that will take up about 50% of your space. Instead, we build raised beds to house the soil. By using raised beds and walking aisles, we need about half as much sandy loam soil as we would if we were just to soil the entire greenhouse. Okay, so now we're going to take a tour of our second greenhouse, and this is the solar house. And one of the things that you'll notice is I am standing in a walking aisle. This walking aisle is about 3 feet wide. This is for my wheelbarrow and my wagon. And then you'll also notice that we have the beds. They are raised beds. And we have the sandy loam soil. You see, I can come and it's that same beautiful soil, and it has earthworms. Sorry, I have a little earthworm phobia. I know, that's strange for a gardener, but they give me nightmares. So anyhow, there, proof. Good soil. The earthworms are right there on top today. They're up here probably getting a drink or a snack. Okay, sandy loam soil with earthworms. Now, this bed, you can see, is raised pretty high. We actually have the soil in the top cinder block here. And then you'll see there's a layer of plastic. And under this layer of plastic, there is two layers of cinder block. And this is full of gravel. Now, this is part of the heat system in this building. And this one is super neat. So what we have going on here is, if you look clear up to the ceiling, we have a black tube. And that black tube is collecting heat off the ceiling. So basically, we're standing in a solar collector. So when the temperature gets to about 50 degrees down here, and it gets to about 70 up there, we start sucking the hot air down the tube. There's a little squirrel cage fan there in the corner. And the squirrel cage fan sucks the air down and then blows it down into the gravel that's under the bed. These little things here are the vents, and I can actually feel some cool air coming out of there. So we store the warm air from the ceiling in these two lower layers that are full of gravel. The heat then radiates up into the soil, and at night we actually put the heavy frost blanket. I can show you that. This is what's given me my extra zone, because I have the two layers of plastic and now I have the heavy frost blanket. And this actually goes over the bed at night. And the heat from the gravel radiates up into the soil. We can actually raise the soil temperature about 13 degrees every day that the sun shines. Like it'll go up and then it drops down and then goes up. So it's not 13, 13 plus 13 plus 13. It's just plus 13 and minus 13. That's about the average that it does. On the cloudy days, we don't have as cold of nights. We tend to hold right around 6 degrees of what the soil would be on a sunny day. So the blankets, they go on at night. They come off during the day. We collect our heat and it goes down into the beds. Beautiful, beautiful system. We got a grant from CSU, Colorado State University, to put in this system and give it a try. And what we were looking at is, what would be the cost if we heated this building with propane, because we can't get natural gas here. The first year of the experiment, the cost of the propane would have cost us about $7,000 to heat this building. The second year, propane went up, it would have cost us about $10,000. The third year, propane actually went up again, it would have cost us about $12,000 to heat this building. And to heat this building with our little solar system here costs us $165 a season. And the season that we're heating is October to March, so it's just that backside of that calendar. We don't need heat in the summer. We have plenty, believe me. So we went from having a $12,000 heat bill to a $165 heat bill. That is huge for us. And the other thing that happens from October to March is I can grow right around $3,000 worth of produce that I can sell. It's salad greens during that time period. So when I have a $12,000 bill and only grow $3,000 worth of stuff, I have to make up the $9,000 in the summer. Now it's the other way around. I have a $165 bill. I grow $3,000 worth of stuff. We actually have some profit. So this system, I love it. It's fantastic. It's been in operation for 14 years now. We've never had a frost problem with the plants. It's always in the wintertime, cool weather, salad greens. But between the heat system and the frost blankets, we're golden. I have seen it 13 below outside and frost-free under the covers inside. Okay, so that's one end of the calendar for us in here. The other end is our summer. And this greenhouse has, if you look at the sidewall here, there is this wood bar here, and then these are panels. And all of these panels, they just open up to the outside, and then they just stick on a rebar post. I can't open them right now because we have a snow load that slid off the roof and is blocking the panels, so that I can't open them, which is actually good because the snow kind of seals the panels for me. But But in the summertime, we just open up the panels, the doors on either end, and the cross breeze is our cooling system for this building. So it functions pretty well all on its own. Love the heat system. It's a great one to duplicate if you're putting in a greenhouse that's a little more on the bigger size. This one here is about 30 by 60. The next factor to growing successfully in your greenhouse and getting the maximum output is the layout. So you'll want to take advantage of all the premium space you have in your greenhouse without crowding the plants. So we can do this three ways. One, by growing in raised beds and having walking aisles, you can plant your plants closer together and have more space for the plants. The old-fashioned row garden was set up so you could drag a cultivator behind your horse to cultivate the field, but we don't need a horse and the cultivator or the space between the plants if we grow in the raised beds. Therefore, the plants can be closer together. Okay, the next one is grow your plants vertically. This can save a tremendous amount of space. A winter squash plant that would take up 32 square feet on the ground only takes 2 square feet if you grow it vertically. Also, tomato plants on the ground take up about 9 square feet, and you only need about 3 square feet if you grow them vertically. So we have a super easy trellis design that you can make without any tools at all. The instructions are in the Success Bundle. Look under Easy Trellis in that bundle. The third way to save space is to have uniform bed and aisle sizes. This way, you can learn how to maximize each bed. It also makes it easier on you if you want to move your equipment around. So for example, my low tunnels are the same size and so are the covers. So I can put the low tunnel indoors or outdoors, and I can interchange the shade cloth and the frost blankets and the plastic on any of the beds that are the same size. So the third greenhouse that I want to show you is the Odyssey. We are in the Odyssey right now. This is our newest one. When we first got it, it was a high tunnel and it had a single layer of plastic on the roof. A big windstorm came this year and tore the roof off, just split it right down the center. And so when we put a new roof on, we went ahead and put 2 layers of plastic, and now we have a blower and we blow air in between. The difference that it's made so far that I've noticed this winter is about 6 degrees. We're 6 degrees warmer in here in the mornings than we were last year with the single layer plastic. So that doesn't sound like a lot, but when you're hovering around freezing, it can be huge. It can be the difference between a crop making it and not. So I'm very pleased to have the new roof on it. Okay, so I want to show you a little bit about the layout of this building. And if you take a look, this is our north end here. We start with a 3-foot walking aisle here, so I can get equipment up in here if I want the wheelbarrow or wagon or something like that. And then on the side aisles, these are the same width as the cinder blocks. I like the cinder block beds because I'm not that good with tools, and I can build one of these beds by myself and I don't have to ask for help. And they're semi-portable. You can move one, you can dig up the dirt and move it somewhere else. And I like them because they're all the same width. So if I'm sitting here working in my garden, I can reach to the center of the bed, and then I can go around to the other side and reach to the center of the bed. So I actually get a sit-down job instead of a bend-over job, and I like that a lot better. Again, we are using the same soils. These are all the sandy loam with the compost added. And every year we just basically add compost and then sand if we need to get a little more, crumb factor. Let's call it the crumb factor, so that the soil is more crumbly and not sticky. If you just continue to add compost after about 5 or 10 years, it gets a little sticky. So same soil everywhere, same bed layout. Like I said, equipment can go from this bed to that bed over there, to a bed down there, to a bed in the next greenhouse. It's really quite nice to have that. And then my very favorite tool is my sitting blocks. We have about a dozen of these. And because all the beds are the same size, we can take them with us and they can travel around, and it really helps save the back quite a bit. The other nice feature about this building is we have the roll-up sides. So you can see we put the chicken wire on because the chickens like to come in and the cats. And this side will roll up to here. And so we get cross ventilation through here with the roll-up sides, and that's really all we need. It's quite nice. Right now we have everything down because of being wintertime. So anyhow, this is a great building. You can build high tunnels with a garage door in the end. So if you wanted to, you could actually drive in. I don't need to drive in, so we just put just a screen door in. But great building, really enjoy it. Get lots of good sunshine and produces a lot of great food. So the next factor that you'll need to consider is the pest and disease control. So this will be different in your greenhouse than in your outdoor garden. So my outdoor garden is frozen over half of the year, and this changes the insect and disease population. So as we go higher in the zones, we can have different problems because the greenhouse is active more days than the outdoor garden. The observant gardener gets to eat more garden fresh vegetables. This is a line that I preach in my garden show. And I have a 7-step process that I do every week to monitor the plants for any problems. So once you get used to observing and seeing what is normal, then when something is out of the norm, it shows up and you will know it. The first and ongoing thing that you must do to keep your garden free of trouble is to look for clues. So get used to looking at your plants every day. You know how you can look at a person that you know and tell if they are getting sick? If you spend enough time observing your plants, you will find that you can detect a problem in the very beginning before it gets out of hand. Okay, so here's my 7-step guide that I do every week. Number one, check the weather forecast and cover the plants with the appropriate covers if necessary. Number two, are all the plants still there? Sometimes the little plants will get eaten clear off and there will be holes in your planting rows. Number three, look at the leaves and stems. Are they shiny, wilty, curly, off color, holy, sticky, or moldy? Look under the leaves because this is where most of the bugs will hide. Step back and look at the plant as a whole to see if it still has its vitality. Okay, number four, take a look at your soil. Does it smell fresh? Is it too dry, too wet? Has anything been digging in your soil? Are there weeds coming up? Do you have the appropriate amount of mulch? Number five, make notes in a garden journal as to what you are seeing. If you look every day, you will start to notice when things are not right. Number six, look back in your journal to see if this spot in your greenhouse or this particular plant has had this look before. Also notice the time of year you might be seeing something. In the greenhouse, we see spider mites in June when the weather turns hot and dry, and we see aphids in the spring as soon as the greenhouses warm up. Keeping a journal every year, you can start to track these yearly hatches so you can catch them before they take over the whole building. Number seven, identify the problem. If you see something that's not right, then it's time to identify what is going on. Usually, a problem will fit into one of three categories: environmental, disease, or pests. If you can't figure it out, try an internet search or contact your county extension office to identify what's going wrong. You might also go at night with a flashlight to see if you can find any bugs that might be eating your plants at night. So if you will be observant, you will get to eat more garden fresh vegetables. So this list of the 7 things that I do will be in your success bundle, so you can print that off for yourself. I grew up in my parents' greenhouses, and when we put up our first greenhouse, here are the rules for success that my father shared with me. They have served us well over the years, and I'm passing them along to you. So here are the 8 rules to follow to prevent disease and pests from entering your greenhouse. Number one, do not smoke or allow anyone who smokes in your greenhouses. If you are a smoker, wash your hands after you smoke and before you enter your buildings. Cigarettes can carry the tobacco mosaic virus, which can be transferred from your hands to your tomatoes, peppers, potatoes, and eggplants. Once the tobacco mosaic virus is in your soils, you may never be able to get it out of your building. And this will make it hard to grow your tomatoes, peppers, potatoes, and eggplants ever again. Number two, make sure the plants are dry when the sun goes down. Diseases and molds and funguses can really multiply at night in a humid, moist environment. If you water early in the day and allow your plants to dry before the sun goes down, you will have less disease, molds, and fungus problems. Number three, if you are growing in the winter, do not water until the plants are bone dry, then soak them good and wait until they are bone dry again. This prevents dampening off. Number four, do not bring plants in from other greenhouses. The fastest way to get an insect invasion is to bring plants in from an infected greenhouse. So keep your greenhouse isolated, start all your plants from seed, or do a 21-day quarantine period where you keep the new plants away from your greenhouse and under observation for 21 days to see if there are any diseases or unhatched eggs on the plants. Number five, keep your greenhouse clear of old plant material and weeds. Piles of old plant material and weeds are usually not monitored and can create a breeding ground for pests. Keep the area clean inside the building and near any vents or doors. Number six, use integrated pest management to prevent breakouts. Greenhouses are a great place for keeping pests in or out. So if you have pests in your greenhouse, you can do a weekly release of pest predators to eat the pests. With the greenhouse, the predators can't get away like they can in an outdoor garden. Number seven, keep screens on vents and doors to prevent bugs from entering. Cats and chickens too. Number eight, do not walk on your growing soil. Not only are you compacting the soil, which gets rid of the space for air and water and microbes, but you're making more work for yourself. So this list will also be in the success bundle for you to get a copy of. Earlier we talked about making the decision of growing organically or chemically. And when you get a pest or disease invasion, this is where your resolve is going to be tested. And I can tell you that there are organic growers in every state and every type of climate. And these growers may not be perfect, but they have learned how to control disease and pests through organic methods, and so can you. It's easier to reach for a bottle of this or that, but in the long run, your plants and your microbes, they lose. In the Success Bundle, there's a handout titled Homemade Organic Pest Control. These are the homemade, inexpensive ways to control pests and diseases organically. So the use of integrated pest management works great in the greenhouses too. If worst comes to worst, rip out the crop and plant something else. I've done it a few times, but for the most part, you can get the problem under control. The key is to spot the problem early and keep it from getting bigger. Okay, so let's take a tour of this greenhouse. This one's name is the Little Greenhouse, and we built this one over 30 years ago. And I absolutely love this greenhouse. This one is a pit greenhouse. We're 4 feet down in the ground. We are 40 feet wide, or 40 feet wide, I guess, long. 40 feet long and 20 feet wide. This would be a perfect greenhouse for a family. This one, we have our long wall to the south. This is south here. And the sun comes in. We had a fiberglass and glass front on it that lasted 30 years, and we had to replace it last year. So now we have what I call a double bubble, which is two layers of plastic with air blown in between. It has really made this house a lot warmer. And because we're down in the ground, we're pit greenhouse, we rarely get a frost in here. We might get one if it goes below zero outside, but this one I trust pretty much because of being in the ground. The other thing that we have in this greenhouse is we have a rammed earth wall. So the north wall is 16 inches thick. It's made out of rammed earth, which is, it's our clay soil. Let me come over and show it to you. So This is the clay soil that we showed you the other day. So we just dug up some of our ground, added a little cement to it, and this wall has been standing for over 30 years. It's pretty amazing. We do have the cement pillars for support in between here. The roof in this section is insulated, just like you would your house. I think it's got 6 inches of insulation. And then it's got a tin roof on the outside to keep the moisture out. We do have the support poles in the center, just because this is a pretty wide expanse for the roof. But this greenhouse is amazing. The beds, I love every bed except this one in the back. It is 4.5 blocks wide. And the issue with this one is I have to, I can't reach the center. So I had to actually put some blocks. We got a couple blocks down in the center here so that I can reach across it and weed on the inside. So that's the only thing that I would do different is this bed would be narrower. Then we have a regular aisle in the middle, just like the other building. All the soil, you know, back to our sandy loam. I just love this soil. We use it everywhere. And, you know, another great greenhouse. We get amazing food out of this one. We can grow in it year round, and, you know, being down in the earth, it really holds its temperatures well. So the last factor is crop timing, and this is a really big subject. How you time your crops can make or break your harvest. With a greenhouse, you now have 365 days to grow your food instead of your shorter outdoor season. So when you learn how to do proper crop timing, you can have a large variety of food all year round. So there's three different crop timings that we will follow. The first is seasonal timing, next is harvest timing, and the third one is succession planting. So seasonal timing for your outdoor gardens means that you can use your zones for knowing when to plant your crops. In the 365-day greenhouse, the zones are not as important as the day length. So when the day length is over 10 hours a day, then the crops will come out of dormancy and they'll want to grow really well. For the northern hemisphere, in a temperate climate, you can grow cool weather greens all year round. Flowering cool weather plants such as broccoli, we would start in early January. And warm weather plants, you could start some around mid-February. So I've included in the success bundle is a chart titled 365-Day Greenhouse Seasonal Crop Timing. And this will give you a sample of when you can start several different vegetables in the early spring. The second crop timing to think about is timing for harvest. So this is where you start a crop based on when you want it to mature. So you decide what you want to eat when, and you work your way backwards through the calendar to when you need to start the crop. For example, if I want to make sauerkraut October 15th and I had a 100-day cabbage variety, then I would start my cabbage plants around June 1st. So the grow time on the package, you know, it's just an estimate, so you need to add a few weeks to buffer if you need a specific date on the harvest end. For our sauerkraut, you know, a couple days one way or the other wouldn't really matter. Okay, the third type of timing is succession. So this is where you do succession planning so you have a new crop ready all the time. So there are ways to time your crop so you have a particular food ready to harvest all the time. So we use this kind of timing for our wholesale accounts. So, you know, a grocery store doesn't want to hear that the lettuce crop is done and it'll be 3 weeks before the next crop is ready. So this is a sure way to lose your account with that store. Crop timing is essential to create a steady income, but it's also useful for putting food on the table. You would not want like 30 pounds of lettuce in 1 week. I bet you would rather have 1 pound of lettuce over 30 weeks. So this is the power that we gain with succession timing. So crop timing is a great skill, whether you're growing indoors or out. It becomes more important as your growing season lengthens. So my goal is to provide a variety of food for the table all year round, and crop timing helps me to accomplish this. Okay, So we are going to go ahead and tour this building. We call it the Haunted House, see all the ghosts. No, actually we call it the Tomato House. And the covers are to cover the plants. I know there's no tomatoes in here right now. It is the middle of winter. And in the wintertime, we switch everything to greens production. But this house is, it's built quite differently than the other ones. The first thing you'll notice is the beds, and they're only about 2.5 feet wide. And the sides of the beds, these here, this is actually cement board. This is something that you use in construction if you're going to like put a bathroom in your house and you use this instead of drywall, you use this behind the tiles in the bathroom to, you know, keep the walls from getting wet. This stuff has held up fantastically well. We don't step on it or stand on it. But other than that, it's done great. We've even hit it with a rototiller a few times and it's stood up to that. So these beds are made for vertical growing. Remember we talked about vertical growing being one of the ways to help you utilize your space better. So we have the support bars and then we have the wires up here. And we grow tomatoes and cucumbers, sometimes some melons in here. And we plant them along the sides and then they grow up and we tie them to the trellises here. So that's why these beds are narrow, because we have one plant on either side. And then we have the wider aisles here. The aisles are about 2.5 feet as well. And the reason for that is because the tomato plants tend to hang over a little bit into the aisles. So this is specific for tomatoes. Now, we take the tomatoes out mid-November, and then we come in with a crop of greens. And we grow the greens until March when the tomatoes get replanted in here. So we can go mostly without heat. I do have a heat system in the bottom of this. It's like in-floor heat like you would have for a house. So there's a tube of 60 degree water. It's a plastic tube with 60 degree water running through it. It comes off of a domestic house water heater. And we just run the hot water through the tubes and that warms the soil enough that I can get the tomatoes in here in March and get them going. I do turn it on for the lettuce. The reason I do that is it helps the crop to stay a little more in summer mode and I get a little more volume so that I can supply my stores with the lettuce. As far as covering at night, we take these are our heavy frost blankets. And they just go over this little wire at night. Just like this. And so basically, what I'm doing with my heat is I'm heating a space that's only this tall as opposed to heating this entire building. And we will get just the slightest amount of frost on the ends near the end walls if it's a below zero night, but for the most part this takes us through the whole season. The house has it has power. This is a greenhouse. It has a double poly roof, so I got my double bubble on top. I got 4 foot purlins to help with the snow load, and then we also have posts to help if the snow doesn't shed, it'll help support the roof. We have collapsed this house once before, so we make sure that we keep the posts in. And summertime, we just have vents and fans. They're on a thermostat. Air just runs through when it needs to. And it's a great building. I love this one, too. I love all my greenhouses. It is so much fun. They're all unique. They all have their own microclimates. We can grow different things in each one. But all still really fun, and we get a lot of great production. So anyhow, this is our final house on our tour of greenhouses today. Greenhouses are a great amount of fun. They provide fresh food all year round and can save your family a significant amount of money. A greenhouse is one of the best decisions that you can make. Put these 5 factors to work for you and your greenhouse will be a success. But there are a couple of the things that I would like you to consider when deciding to buy food or to grow your own food. So the food you grow, you don't pay taxes on. You can count on it as exercise time. It's a great place to get away from it all, and it's cheaper than a therapist. So do add in these factors when deciding what the crop is worth to you and whether or not you want to put up a greenhouse. So if you'd like to know what my crops are worth to me, then I have included the 33 garden gifts that my garden has given me in your success bundle. So whether a garden is inside a structure or outside in the open, it can still give you many, many gifts. I want to thank you so much for your time. Go grab the Setting Your Greenhouse Up for Success information bundle and start your greenhouse journey today. Until next time, may your garden be easy, fun, productive, and always organic.
Yeah, so that was awesome, wasn't it? I mean, just being smart about physics and using what technology we have, they reduced the heating bill from $10,000 to what was it, $165 or something like that? Oh my gosh. Okay, I get it. Yeah, like there's a lot we can do, right? So pretty amazing. Now, at the beginning of this, I had teased you about a surprise. And here's the thing, is that I was so impressed with Lynn and what she's doing. I said, hey, Lynn, let's get together and have an event where people come and tour your greenhouses, your five greenhouses, and they actually get to, you know, see what it's like in January, get to see the stuff growing in there, get to experience the different heating systems and, you know, how she covers the plants and, you know, and why she does it in one or where she doesn't do it in another. And just, you know, some of the physics and what it takes to build one of these and what it looks like and how to run them. Like a real event, we'll all get together and party. That's coming up in January 2020, and I am really so stoked. We haven't done a live event with the Grow Network for so long, so I'm really going to be having a lot of fun and looking forward to seeing you there. So click on that button to the right. Lynn has a free high-performance gardening class. She also has a free training on seed saving and a whole bunch of other materials and really, really good videos. Just, I mean, we're talking about a solid, experienced, practical grower who's also a really good teacher. Click on that button to the right and sign up with Lynn and get into some of her streams of how to grow food. Just an amazing person. And of course, down below that is the button for the whole summit package. So these summits, you'll notice there's no outside advertising. And the way we produce these is based on your sponsorship. So if it's something that you can afford and can do, we would surely appreciate you picking up the whole summit package. Tell you what, we will mail it to you. You can get one of those thumb drives. And I think we got a special gift in there this year. We usually do. So, yep, I certainly do appreciate your support when you purchase the whole summit package. This is Marjorie Wildcraft, and you're with the Grow Network, who is the premier community of people who grow our own food and make our own medicine.